All right, welcome to In Conversation with University of Manitoba President Michael Benarosh. I'm Michael Alves, and I will be in conversation with our University of Manitoba President. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
So we'll get into the origin story here as to how you became University of Manitoba President. This is some folks' kind of first introduction to you as these series of conversations kind of get into more meaty things about, you know, what's happening on campus. We'll delve into those. But this is kind of the first date, as it were. Maybe we can talk a little bit about your academic background and you know, how you got into university administration, first of all.
Yeah, that's a great question. So just to let you know my academic background, I have a PhD in economics from Carleton University, and my wife is also from Winnipeg. We were in Ottawa. We had been there for 5 years, and we decided that we wanted to move back to Winnipeg. And there was actually a 1 year position available at the University of Winnipeg, and a person I was doing my PhD with had gotten a tenure track position there. He was a bit ahead of me in the program. And so I applied for this 1 year position, and they called him and said, "So what's this Michael Benarosh guy like?" And he said to them, "Well, you should hire him." So they gave me the 1 year position. I actually came to Winnipeg on a 1 year position, and then a tenure track position opened at the University of Winnipeg. I say that because that's where I first got into university administration. I had had some time working on the union executive and some of the bargaining teams. And I think through that, people started to get to know me, and I became chair of the economics department at University of Winnipeg. And I did that for, I think, around 9 years. And then one day, Brian Stevenson, who's now the president, or was the president at Lakehead, and Lloyd Axworthy, who was the president, tapped me on the shoulder after a Senate meeting and said, "You know, would you like to study how we would start a business school at the University of Winnipeg?" And so I did that. And once again, they tapped me on the shoulder. I found myself being dean there. But after a few years, I guess I thought to myself, well, you know, I seem to be good at this. People seem to want to listen to my ideas. I seem to be able to take people's ideas and bring them to fruition. And the dean of the Asper School of Business came up as being available. And so I threw my name in the hat, and I got a first interview and got a second interview and got the position at the University of Manitoba. And I think once I got the position at the Asper School, that's when, you know, my career trajectory and administration really took off, just a higher profile, getting to know people in the Winnipeg community. And then I did that for 6 years, and then went off to Ryerson to be the provost for 3 years. And that was a lot of fun. But this opportunity came up, and as a good prairie boy, and my wife and I were longing to come back to Winnipeg, again, threw my name in the hat, and things seemed to work out, and now I find myself in this position.
So you start out as an educator, and then it kind of transitioned in administration. Do you miss the classroom in any sense?
I do. And what I really miss is the connection with the students as a professor. You know, I call it teaching. I still do some lecturing, and did quite a bit around economics, but you know, that the connection to students and what they're really at the university for, which is to get an education and then to graduate. You know, when you get into administration, you get into a different relationship with students. And one of the things that happens is, you know, I tend to now associate and talk more with the student leadership of the university, as opposed to most of our students who are taking classes. And so, you know, I miss that. I always enjoyed teaching. And so I miss having that kind of connection with a broad range of students.
You mentioned experience on the bargaining unit at the U of W, and some of the kind of like early things that allowed you to be tapped on the shoulder to head the business program. As far as skills, because obviously, you know, you become a professor in economics, that's not necessarily the skills that lead to administration.
No.
I have to imagine you, A, got some skills that allowed you to do this through things like that bargaining and that kind of experience. But like, is there education for an administrator that you then had to seek out?
So the answer is yes. And let me just talk, there's a reason I spoke about, you know, being at a bargaining table. And I've been at the bargaining table both for on the union side, but also on the management side. And that is skills of listening and trying to find a path forward that builds consensus or maybe finds a solution where not everybody gets what they want, but you find a path forward that people can agree on and can move forward. And I think those are important attributes that I seem to have and I've seemed to use that have really worked well throughout my career. But you know, there are many different places. I tell the stories when I became president of the U of M. I do what I do as a good academic. I go and read a whole bunch of books about being a university president. Well, I did the same thing when I became a dean. I'd say earlier in my career, I kind of just went along with it as a chair. I took a you know, kind of went to the odd professional development. But when I became a dean, one of the first things I did was attend one conference or one training session at CHERD, the Center for Higher Education Research and Development, which is based at the University of Manitoba. It was a full weekend session for university administrators. And then when I became dean of the U of M, I went off, or maybe it was at U of W, I went off and did with the biggest business school association, AACSB, I did a full 5-day training on being a new dean. And those things were really, really important for me. And now I've just finished a couple of different sessions or am a part of one. And one of them is the Harvard session for university presidents. And so an opportunity to meet university presidents. Some of the skills change as you go to different positions, especially one of the things about being president is how public everything I do is. And, you know, I've learned that everything I say, you know, people really dissect. And so just kind of making, you know, words matter. And so learning about the context of how we manage. But I would say that some of my principles of wanting to be a good listener, of being responsive, of trying to find ways to move forward have been something that I've continued to nurture as my careers move on, though obviously the issues become more complex as you move from a, you know, a department chair to a dean to a vice president to a president.
Now, you had been at the U of M at Asper prior to leaving for Ryerson. You know, obviously there's the gap where you're away and then coming back. That distance, I'm curious, does that give you kind of like an outsider's perspective on the campus in returning to it that you might not have had you, you know, moved from the dean of Asper to the president in kind of like one single move?
Absolutely. And really important, I think, for my development as an administrator, as a university administrator. First and foremost, being in an Ontario system with over 20 universities and being a part of the Council of Ontario Universities, which is kind of a body that brings together all the universities, and to watch the different things that universities are doing across the province. First, that was extremely informative. And being in an Ontario context where the competition is really intense across institutions. And so you have to continue to move forward and continue to move your institution forward. Also, I chose Ryerson as an institution that I was interested in because I was really interested in some of the things they were doing. First of all, they have a strong sense of social justice as a university, seen as a very progressive university. And that really appealed to me. But it's kind of mixed with this real entrepreneurial spirit that they have as an institution. It came out of a community college or originally, but it evolved into a university that has a very strong component of experiential learning and a real commitment to excellence in the experience that students have at the institution. And so for me, it was bringing together some of my kind of University of Winnipeg. It's also an urban university. So University of Winnipeg, an urban university, Asper School, a business school with a real entrepreneurial spirit and kind of a can-do spirit, and bringing those together to lead as provost of a university like Ryerson gave me a perspective that I think is really helpful coming back. And then also just seeing how other institutions run and then coming here and bringing that different perspective I think helps me understand the strengths of our university versus the areas where I think we have to do some work in.
So the title of provost, I mean, is this just like kind of an Ontario thing where that's essentially what a president is, or can you, you know?
No, actually, I mean,
no. Okay.
We have a you know, our vice president of academic is provost here too. It's kind of a shift that's happened recently across universities, is that the vice president, the provost, becomes kind of the chief operating officer, chief academic officer of the university. And so that frees the president up to really look at strategy and work on strategy and work very much on the external parts of the job, government relations, alumni, community relations, industry. And so it's been kind of a devolution of some of the responsibilities to the provost, and freeing up the president to be able to do some of the things that have become a bigger part of president's jobs, fundraising, philanthropy, which has become a bigger part of our jobs, given the current financial situation. And so, you know, I think that worked well. Ryerson had a strong provost model. And what I mean by that is the authority really did lie in the provost's office, and it freed the president up. However, at the end of the day, many of the final decisions were still the president's. And as provost, I would go to the president and say, okay, we've been working on this. This is the direction we want to take. Are you comfortable with that? And he would ask questions. And then I would take those back and we would improve upon what we were doing. The president and I there had a very strong relationship. And so it's a way of empowering people within the institution outside of the president's office, to be able to continue to advance the academic part of the institution.
So kind of like a president's the big picture and the provost is the like get it done boots on the ground kind of approach?
Absolutely. Yes, very much like that. And so that, you know, it was something I was ready for at an institutional level, and it was a lot of fun.
So obviously, like when you're dean, I mean, there's, you know, your faculty, but then there's like a level above you. And then provost, it sounds like there's just a person above you. And now as president, you know, that's where things kind of stop. In terms of, I don't want to say territoriality, or just kind of like thinking about kind of your place on the campus, having like that breadth of scope now, do you have lessons that you gleaned from like when you were, you know, in charge of like one portion of campus versus, you know, like are there skills that transfer as like dean to now president, that it's just kind of like an expanded circle of what it would have been at Asper? Or is it like an entirely kind of new purview?
It's not an entirely new purview. It's still, you know, academia. It's still working with faculty members, with staff members, with students. I would say a job like the business school dean has elements that are a lot of presidents do. So, you know, as a business school dean, you have very strong connections to the business community, do lots of fundraising, lots of alumni work. All deans are starting to do this more. You know, engineering deans do that more also. So there's those parts, but you're working within an institution and you're focused on one area. And I think what happens as you move up is the balancing resources and decisions across an entire institution and very many and areas that are different from each other, right? So, you know, fine arts or music is very different than agriculture. And their needs are different. And so it's balancing, you know, those different needs, which I think is part of what makes the job more, you know, more complex. But I think at the end of the day, there's certain skills that really apply to all of the jobs that we do. And I think in universities, what I found has worked best is to be very transparent on decision-making, to be very consultative, and to be honest at the end of the day. And that does, by the way, that doesn't mean that the decisions that are made are always ones that everybody agrees to. And I think a healthy level of disagreement, as long as there's respect, is good for organizations. But I do think that there are some skills that translate. I think where it is now, so for example, for me, as I've moved up, it's working with new parts of the university. So, you know, I came from an economics department, which was in a faculty of arts. So I was comfortable in the faculty of arts, to a business school, and I had to learn about a business school. Well, then going from a business school to a provost, I mean, I had to learn about faculty of science and engineering and, you know, communication and design and social work and nursing. And then you become president and you're doing a lot more fundraising. You're working a lot more with government, you know, hands on. You know, I maybe met the premier or ministers when I was dean, but I didn't have to work with them as much as I do now. And working with federal government and municipal governments, and then, you know, working with alumni from across the university, not just the faculty I come from, and working across the entire province. And so I think that each one of those requires different ways of communication and different ways of working with them. And there's different power imbalances, right? The government has more power over us than alumni who we work with. And so we have to be cognizant of that and learn to work. And so I'm still learning on a lot of that. Luckily, I have a great team at the University of Manitoba who supports the work that we do and helps me along also.
You happened to say the word complex earlier, and obviously, I mean, you took over during a particularly complex time. I'm curious in terms of the added difficulty of working within COVID situation that means that you're not necessarily in the office, or that anyone really is in the office, right? That over this period, do you feel that the learning curve or the, you know, uphill battle that you would have had to climb regardless to kind of like know all of the disparate parts and partners was like made more difficult by COVID?
Absolutely. 100%. You know, so coming in to an environment, you know, if you think about coming into a new job like this, it's a little bit like peeling layers of the onion. As you slowly go, you do kind of, you know, the people closest to you, and then you start to move out from there. And so I'm somebody who really enjoys sitting in a room with people and discussing things. And so, you know, that didn't happen. I told you that I go off and I read things when I get new positions or need to do new things. So one of the things all the books say on leadership is in your first 6 months, you should do a tour in person, listening to people. Don't make a lot of major decisions. You know, listen to people, get to know as many people as possible, go around your institution, walk around, you know, make personal connections. And this threw that completely off, right? So now I see people in little squares or rectangles on my screen, and, you know, have to relate to them in that way. And so, you know, it made that way of relating to people more difficult. I think that one of the roles of the president is to be out in the community. So to go to community events, to be seen at those events, to talk to people. And those kinds of things aren't taking place. I've gone to some community events, but they're often, you know, not interactive. And so, you know, one of the things, and then just getting to know my team. And I think a lot of things happen, you know, in between meetings. You have a meeting and then somebody says something and you go up to them afterwards and you say, oh, you know, I really liked what you said. You know, you want to walk back to my office with me and let's discuss that a little bit more. Or people stick their head into your office and say, do you have a minute? Now we have to formalize all of that. We have to set up Zoom meetings to have those kind of in between formal meeting discussions. And I think one of the things COVID's done is it's made things a lot more formal. You don't drop in. So I imagine for students, you don't drop into your professor's office, or, you know, they're just not there, and you have to do things very formally. You don't run into people at campus and say, oh, you know, I was having a problem with that question that the prof asked, you know, you want to talk about it. And so it has made things much more difficult in a sense. What's good is that I'm actually a Winnipegger and I worked at the University of Manitoba. I think this would have been really hard if I didn't know anybody in the province and I was coming somewhere new. I think it would be really, really difficult to do that. And we've just decided to go forward and begin to do meetings. So I've gone now to every single, with the provost, we have gone to every single faculty council in the university, and we've spoken to every department. And I'm going to be starting that now with people in administrative units that don't fall into the academic units, because I've got to get out there and I've got to hear what people have to say. And it's through that I learn how the university, the thinking of the university, and learn the culture. Because, you know, if you make decisions within the cultural framework, one of the next things we need to do is to begin to update our academic plan, our strategic plan. It's coming to the end of its life. That's a lot more difficult to do under COVID than having sessions where you meet with people, put stickies up on the board, and get different ideas and begin to bring those together. So it's definitely more challenging.
Yeah, I have to imagine those kind of asides that can happen in a meeting where someone might say something that you're just like, wait, hold on a second, let's kind of explore that, or like an offhand comment that prompts, you know, a further discussion later on. Because of like Zoom, you just can't have side conversations and things like that. And
yeah, exactly. And so what ends up happening is, if you want to have those, you have to arrange another Zoom meeting. And, you know, there's something exhausting about, you know, back-to-back meeting, which some days I have, you know, for 10, 12 hours, just back-to-back Zoom meetings. And afterwards, you actually feel physically exhausted, like you just went for a run or a long bike ride or something like that, because it takes something out of you. And it formalizes things. It formalizes relationships more than what I'm used to and what I'm comfortable with. And in doing that, it makes our work a little bit harder. But again, it also has opened up opportunities. So, you know, I can now have one-on-one meetings with people that maybe I wouldn't have had. I can have meetings with people who are not in Winnipeg. You know, just today I was speaking at a symposia put on by the Social Work School, and there was people from all across Canada on the screen. And so, you know, we were able to connect, and probably, and one of the other things I've noticed is more people come to meetings. So there's a lot of people, for example, the University Senate, there's, you know, people are coming because it you know, they don't have to physically get to the university. So sometimes it works better and gives us more access to people than it might have in the past. But overall, I'd be very happy coming back to work. Maybe not for everything, but I'd be happy coming back to work and doing more things in person.
You had mentioned, you know, when you're provost, that the opportunity to kind of see what was happening at other universities in Ontario and kind of gauge that was one of the eye openers for you. I suppose the, you know, this kind of collapsed Zoom world does allow for a bit of that as president to, like, you know, interact with other campuses and see how they're doing things in this online world versus where you would have had to have gone there in person to figure things out.
It does. And definitely gives us an opportunity. So I'm on three, I told you about the Harvard course, but there's an organization called EAB, which we're a part of it. And it has most of the colleges and universities in the United States and Canada on. And so I'm able to go to forums on different topics that they're putting on. And then Universities Canada here in Canada has put on some forums for the presidents too. One of the things they've been doing, for example, is bringing ambassadors from countries, Canadian ambassadors from countries around the world, China, India, the Philippines, Brazil, to speak to us as presidents. And they're doing more of those than they would normally do because we can do them over Zoom. We don't all have to go to Ottawa to listen to this person. You know, I speak to some presidents from universities, which I could have done before, but somehow we didn't, right? And now I do over Zoom and just talk to them about, you know, the things they're working on and share some of our ideas. And then, so it in that sense, it has opened up venues that weren't there before. So absolutely.
Now, you mentioned the strat plan, the window on that is kind of currently shutting. So when is the next strat plan, and like how long of a strat plan is being developed at this point?
Well, I would say I'm thinking about it more than maybe a lot of people and started to talk about it at some of the faculty councils. I'm not sure this is the best environment to develop a five-year strat plan for a couple of reasons. One, I think that working remotely has taken a lot of effort and taken a lot of time for people to do it really well. Time that they would normally use for, if it was faculty members, for research, for others to do other administrative work. And so I'm not, you know, I think a successful conclusion of a strat plan would be one that we got really, really strong engagement for. Number two is there's a lot of uncertainty coming out of COVID of what universities are going to look like and what any workplace is going to look like. And so, you know, I think that it's an uncertain time to plan something for 5 years, because in a year or two, we might get to that time and see that we completely misread what the world's going to look like post-COVID. So what I'm thinking about doing is engaging in an exercise institutionally to look at what we might look at for the next year or two. You know, there's a lot of good things in our strat plan that we're still working on that kind of carry over and will carry over to any new strat plan. So we wouldn't want to throw those things out. But I think that there's new things that we need to work on as an institution. And we need to get some buy-in. And also the details of it, of how we're going to do it, need to be worked out. And so what I'm really interested in doing is working something on something that would be more of a consultation on, you know, what are some things that we'll work on in the next year or two in addition to what's in the strat plan, and then come out of that in maybe a year, a year and a half, depending on when everybody is immunized and when we're kind of, you know, coming back to more normal work or whatever the new normal will be, and then working on that to develop a five-year plan. So I see it going in two stages.
Undoubtedly, we'll end up talking about some of those things in future conversations. But before I let you go today, Michael, you mentioned, you know, being a voracious reader. It is, of course, I Love to Read month. Maybe do you have a book that you've enjoyed especially of late that you can recommend to the listeners?
So yes, a book that I'm reading right now that's really, I've really enjoyed. It's called Behold the Dreamers by Imbolo Mbu. And it's about a couple from the Cameroons who's in the United States and is struggling with the immigration process. And somebody recommended it to me, and I'm really enjoying it at the current time. So I would suggest that. And then I would suggest From the Ashes, which is an incredible book by a Canadian Indigenous author, as another book that I just recently finished. So those would be the two.
Dreamers in that case, meaning like DACA, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Michael, thanks very much for joining us today. And we look forward to future conversations with you here on 101.5 UMFM.
Thank you, Michael. That was very enjoyable, and speak to you soon.